Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back again. You're with Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. We are rolling strong tonight. Oh my goodness, it's Friday. We all made it to Friday. Man, I didn't think I was going to make it for a minute. But I made it. We all made it. We all should be proud of ourselves for working hard all week and looking forward to the weekend. And I will say that it's been a long weekend. It's going to be a long weekend. It's been a long week. A lot of things have transpired this week, today, which we'll kind of sort of get into that just a little bit. I was kind of wanting to get some more people to discuss this matter at hand that I think is really important for us to discuss. So we will see how it play out tonight. We are live streaming worldwide. We have the phone number up on the screen. You know, we're just doing what we do, you know. And but we have one of our hosts that was on the show that carries her own show last night, president of the West Fresno Democratic Club, who's doing a magnificent job talking about politics, about black issues. The West Fresno Club was created for the black community, and she has done a good job taking over the helm. I was the first presiding president, and now we have Miss Eileen. Good evening, Miss Eileen. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, Reverend, and thank you for that. That's high praise coming from the very first president of the West Fresno Democratic Club. So I appreciate that thumbs up. I do.
Yeah, how was your week today? You know, we have open mic night. I mean, anybody can call in 563-999-9349. Oh, you can call in. It's up on the live stream.
Yep.
Hello, how you doing? How was your week this week?
It was a busy week. It was a busy week. I'm a full-time caregiver for my mom, and 3 days out of this week, I was lucky enough to take care of my great-niece, Amari, who's 8 years old and full of energy, and so I was doubly blessed to hang out with both of them this week, and, you know, got into a cooking mood. The only difficult part of my week came today, with the funeral services for baby girl Butler that happened today. And that was the only downer I had in my week. And, you know, I know you're going to talk about homelessness here in Mississippi, Fresno, but Rev, it was heart-wrenching. I could not take the day off. And, you know, because I'm also the chair of Fresno Freedom School, you know, we took up a collection, and I had a chance to go by the church, the Big Red Church, early this morning and drop off the card and the donation to the Butler family, to the dad, to the baby girl dad, and saw two other community people there, Keena McFadden and Des Martinez, who were there to support the family. And I had a chance to, you know, hug the dad and tell him how sorry, you know, we all were about the loss, and to let him know that, you know, Reverend Harris, yourself, was going to be on the scene later. But it was a hard day for a lot of us who weren't able to attend, but, you know, had the family and thoughts and prayers. But you were actually there on the scene, and can you share with us how that was, because that's an ordeal that most people don't go through.
Well, you know, I must say that it was the first time in my ministry work that I have ever experienced first time I ever experienced a 3-year-old baby being buried. It was
3-month-old baby.
I'm sorry. 3-month-old baby. Died on the streets of Fresno. And I know today was a lot, you know, we couldn't get the mom and the dad on because they're still grieving, you know, well, as community, you know, folks are still grieving. But, you know, we will get them on the show, to our listening audience. We will get them on the show to give their version of what happened, why their baby died. For the different reasons, the city of Fresno has a lot to do with it, for lack of building facilities and different things like that, mismanagement of money.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was told that this young lady was still breastfeeding her baby, and the facility that she was in, I don't know the name of the facility, but told her that, you know, she only had 3 or 4 minutes to breastfeed her baby, and then she was booted out. They told to leave the facility. And then, you know, the way Fresno operate, you know, you can sleep, but 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, you got to get up and leave. And, you know, and all women know that better than I do, because I've never had a baby per se, but just watching, you know, to breastfeed a child, it takes a minute, you know. It takes.
Yes, it does.
It takes. You know, to prepare yourself.
It takes a good 20 to 30 minutes per breath.
Cover yourself, you know, appropriately. And so, like I said, all the logistics. I want them to come on and tell their story, but we just want to let the community know that we were there. You know, Fresno Freedom School, you know, New Life and Light Church of God, where I'm an assistant pastor there. We were there. We were there.
Yes.
And we just thank our chairwoman, Miss Eileen Reed, for taking the donations that we contribute to the family and the calls. She had drove that over there herself in her car and was able to meet with the father and those that were there and the mother. But for me, you know, I drove over to the church and they were on their way to the grave site, and because I was trying to get off work, but I couldn't. But anyway, I left the church in the, by Fresno High, and I drove to the grave site where they were at. And as I walked up, I seen the family, and, you know, I didn't know what to expect, what I was going to see. But what I did see, I seen a little bitty hole, a little bitty hole, you know, because, you know, when I do funerals, it's a big, long casket. There was a little bitty hole. And so that was interesting, processing that. And then when I got there, you know, usually, you know, they put the casket up on that little, I don't know what you call that, but they put the casket up there, and, you know, and the priest or pastor say whatever the last words, ashes, ashes, dust to dust, you know, presenting the body back to the ground, earth where it come from. And, you know, and as I walked up, I seen a nice, you know, a picture of the little baby, 3-month-old baby, just beautiful, smiling. And, you know, people were crying, and but it was this hole, you know. I just could not get over the size of that hole. But you figure a baby is 3 months old, it's not going to have a big hole. And I looked down in the hole, and there was a tombstone. put the baby in it. And the dirt was behind the tombstone. And, you know, I'm not sure of the church, how they do their burial or, you know, what they process it. But I know community members went back and grabbed a hand of dirt and sprinkled it on top of the of the tombstone. And, you know, then other members grabbed the shovel and started, you know, covering it with dirt.
That's powerful stuff.
It was a lot for me to process. I mean, I've done many funerals, but I buried my sister, you know, and, you know, she was like 18 years old at the time when she expired. But today was different. It was sad. It was heartbreaking just to look at the mother. And then when the father went over and grabbed the shovel and started covering up his daughter, that did something to me.
His mother went, something.
And she started covering her daughter up with dirt. And so, you know, I can't even imagine what they're going through, you know?
Right.
I mean, that was their seed that they're putting dirt over. You know, you know, we have children and we want, you know, our children to outlive us.
That's a natural order thing.
That didn't happen in this case. And like I said, a lot of it has to do with the lack of services, the lack of housing in this city. And even when we have shelters, you know, how they treat people. When they go into the shelters. You know, I've heard of some shelters in Fresno, they want to turn you into a Christian. And if you don't confess to be a Christian, then they don't want to deal with you. So we have all those different elements that plays a part here in the city of Fresno. And, you know, not to talk about the how the city has destroyed the homeless community here. The ACLU had to come in and sue the city of Fresno and tell them to stop what they're doing because they had no due process. They had no system. They had nothing in place.
Nothing.
But they're just tearing down all of the encampments here in Fresno. And so, like I said, tonight is open mic night. You can call in and talk about whatever you want to talk about. But I just wanted to kind of give a brief synopsis of what I... And to be honest with you, I have to walk away because I got so emotional to see the father, and I'm a father, right, taking a shovel and covering his baby up in dirt. That was just so... I just had to walk away and just gather myself, you know, because
you know something, I'm trying to figure out is this baby girl now, baby girl Butler, Nazarene, is she now going to be the face of homelessness in Fresno, and what kind of impact is that going to have? And I'm only saying that because when you were talking right now and describing the scene at the gravesite, it made me think of another just so happened black female who died in Fresno and became the face of domestic violence in Fresno. Her name was Marjorie Mason. And a lot of people don't know that Marjorie Mason was African American, but she was. And, you know, and it's just ironic to me that we're having this conversation about this baby girl, you know, and her becoming the face of homelessness in Fresno with Marjorie Mason. You know, we have two different social ills, so to speak, happening in Fresno. We ain't even talking about the high black maternal mortality rate or the black infant mortality rate. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about a baby that was alive and thriving with her parents in a shelter and wound up getting kicked out. So my question is, okay, so if you're in a shelter or you're in a place like Marjorie Mason's domestic violence center, you go to this place for help and you wind up getting discriminated against and kicked out or treated differently. And that's a whole other story right there. So I don't know what my point is, y'all. I'm trying to follow Reverend Harris's visual. And I'm just struck by the fact the trail from this baby girl Butler all the way to Marjorie Mason, and all of it happening right here in Mississippi Fresno. So what is a black life worth here?
Well, you know, I want to, those who are watching the screen, I put some links up. One of the first link has, I believe, Daz Martinez, who was a advocate. She was there today for a homeless community. And then I put up some other links that kind of previous links that folks can look at.
Right.
But before I say that, I want to say this, that what you're about to see is going to be mind blowing right now. There was a pastor, they call him the street pastor. I believe his name was Pastor Ray. Don't mark me on that. He'll say his name. And I want to play the clip so those around the world can see what we're dealing with here today. So I won't play all of it, but I just want to play enough of it where you can get the point. Give me a second here.
Die a bad life. PC drug overdose. Mercy drug overdose. Cobra alcohol. Daniel alcohol. Martha cancer. Mona cancer. Her sister comes by here every day. She recycles and she always stops here and shed tears and clean off her sister's plasma and put something on there. It gets to be about 15 people over here and 16 of us there. And then they all got placed in housing. I wanted to see everyone leave before me. They got placed in housing, and when it got to me, the funding ran out. And they did it for a reason, a apparent reason to me. What's so fascinating about this church? You got all these big churches with the air conditioning. Got out here, the body wins, the spirit. And when I built this pulpit, I didn't realize this is my church for me to get up there and hear the word. This is just the homeless ministry. All denominations is welcome here. Everyone welcome. Everyone's welcome here. I'm the founder of this homeless ministry. My name is Ray Bush, known as a street pastor, a ordained street pastor. The sign itself makes them comfortable when homeless ministry. To see the homeless in there, they're homeless, and that makes them comfortable. They know that they can come. And I will give them my ear to hear whatever they have to say. And believe me, I have heard of many stories, some that make me smile, some make me laugh, some put tears in my eyes, and some make me cry. This is my homeless memorial. This is a plaque, pieces of wood that I just paint white and with permanent markers put their name on it. Some of them have their real name, some have their street name. Mostly everyone go by their street name. This is something here. This is a daughter, and this is a mother. This is the mom. Died a week apart. And over here is Big Sue. She just recently died. She was another homeless advocate. And she died on the street, froze to death. I put 77 in at one time. Oh, 77 had died. But now it's up to, I think, 120-something. But at least, they can be identified now, opposed to putting ashes all together in one common grave where you don't know who's who. At least they can come here and feel more comfortable about that day to pay tribute to the individual that they love or was a friend to. That's a respectful thing. Yeah, respectful. I lived a homeless life for many years, maybe 10 or 15 years. So I know what it's all about. And I've heard a lot of stories of different homeless people just by listening to what they have to say. They need that more than anything for someone just to listen to what they have to say. I'm just glad and fortunate that I know and understand how the homeless community works itself and how the people are, because I've been there and I'm still here. I'm very appreciated to the homeless community, because I have always said that it saved my life. Where would I be if I wouldn't have been led from Dakota and Mark to there, knowing nothing about it, and was able to get around other people that had similar problems that I had? Lost a loved one, and his was all messed up. See, when my mom died, that took effect on me. I found her dead, and my mom, we were very close. And we came to Fresno and buried her, because this was our roots. This is where everybody gets buried. And that's when I was led from Dakota Mark to here. So that's what got me in the homeless community. Losing a loved one. This is why I do all this. Got clothing, food, first aid for them. Somebody get cut. I'm the first one running out there with my first aid kit. You know. Give it service. And I'm on a mission. And when my mission is completed, then I'll go away. No, it's not comfortable out here. But what I'm doing, I like what I'm doing. Do I like living this type of life? No, absolutely not. Any person with a sound mind would not like living out here like this. But if that person have a purpose, then that purpose would override the condition. The church is here today.
You know, I had an opportunity to meet Pastor Ray when we were having a fight with the city
where we were
whereas to the homeless encampment.
Mm-hmm.
And the brother the brother was deep. He really walked what he taught. You know.
Wow.
And I can't even say that for, you know, many pastors at in our community right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was a trooper. He was someone who really cared about people, you know, and cared about them as an individual,
wow.
as them being treated with dignity and respect,
mm-hmm.
you know. And people, a lot of people are homeless for different reasons. We have a lot of people right now, one paycheck from being homeless.
Absolutely.
Okay? Let's just keep it real for a minute. Okay. We have people, one paycheck from being homeless. And I'm talking about the mother, the father, the children. Because we live in a society right now that don't give 2 cents about the other man and woman.
Mm.
And Pastor Ray, he was a pastor up
mm-hmm.
under the bridge. I mean, I've actually seen
mm-hmm.
him pray for people. I've actually seen him lay hands on folks. I actually seen him give out food to those who came by in their shopping carts that was hungry. He wasn't lying when he said
him
that.
Out there. No.
He wasn't lying when he said that when someone cut themselves, he running over there with his first aid kit. He was doing the work of Jesus Christ.
On the front lines. Wow.
And when he said, look at these churches around here.
Mm-hmm.
They got air conditioning. They got this. They got that. He said, all we have out here is the wind. You know, I don't know if he passed away or if he's still living or not.
I was going to ask you that.
I have so much respect for him that he made all of those little tombstones for people who died on the streets of Fresno.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He did that himself.
Wow.
And he fed the homeless. He gave clothes out to those who needed it.
So he was a servant leader.
He didn't have to do that. You know, Big Sue died on the street. She froze to death.
I remember.
And she was on Alan Autry transition team. So,
and that was my next question for you, Rev. That transition team, whatever happened to that Pathways to Home, or I think that's what it was called, Pathways to Home. City of Fresno had set aside money to help them transition. Wow. Wow. And so Big Sue lost her life while on this group.
Right. You know, HUD had gave the city of Fresno millions of dollars to deal with housing. You want to know what the city of Fresno did with the money? They put it on salaries. Salaries.
So they stole
it. The money on salaries, not the homeless community here. So
misappropriation of funds.
The reason that we have a problem with homelessness here in Fresno is because of the dysfunctional leadership that the city of Fresno and the Fresno County Board of Supervisors, those two entities don't even talk to one another. They don't even like one another. And what people don't understand about the health piece of homelessness, the city of Fresno don't deal with health.
Right.
The county of Fresno deal with health. And I have to educate people, say, look, stop jumping on the city about mental illness. That's Fresno County.
Right.
But what
correct.
Fresno County did, Board of Supervisors, they defunded the mental health program and gave the money to the sheriff, Sheriff Mims, to build her jails or whatever she's going to do.
I'm a witness to that. Those of us
okay.
who have done social work, we can witness this.
So, while you see people walking around, talking to themselves, or whatever the case may be, the money has been cut from the politician to what? Fund law enforcement.
Right.
That's
lock
what happened.
Up.
And then when
Adam Aki,
I was the only pastor here in Fresno that stood on the steps when the ACLU came in and sued the city of Fresno for human rights violation, constitutional
right.
rights violation. I stood with the homeless. No other pastor in Fresno did that.
Wow.
I was
wow.
there.
That was huge, Rev. And I'm saying that because what would Jesus do? Jesus would expect Christians to stand with those who can't stand for themselves. Stand up for them. Wow.
$2.5 million dollar lawsuit. $2.5 million dollar lawsuit. Now, I want to play another clip. I think it's important that people see what we see.
Okay, what are we going to look at here?
Okay, so we're live streaming here again.
All this craziness is going on, and they say that this is all happening because of all the crime and all the drugs and all of that. Well, we're not into that. So, and half the people that come out here to sell drugs, I'm not going to lie, they don't even live here.
Wow.
We throw a lot away. Just right now, we're just trying to get it done. Just
look
get done.
At that.
We don't even know right now. You know what I mean? Right now, we're just really just doing a lot. A lot of stuff that was packed already, we would have gone through this. You know what I mean? Because we barely moved from, because we had a house on the other side. We moved all that stuff over there. It's kind of crazy. Okay, all this has to go with it. You got to pull those out. All right, Boogie! Come here! That's right, now I don't know if you know this thing.
I think we're going to go to Tent City. Tent City, yeah. Because of the way over there, straight up. And I don't know if they're going to help us over there or they're going to let us stay or something, but we need a place to stay. You look how far it is right now. You go everywhere, and you're going to find somebody with a knife, with a gun or something, try to get whatever you have, you know. And we don't have nothing.
Okay, I'll push you.
Oh my God.
You know, I'm playing these clips because I know about each one of these clips because I was there when it all happened.
All this craziness is going on, and they say that this is all happening because of all the crime and all the drugs and all of that. Well, we're not into that.
Wow. Well, what she said is true from what I've been hearing on KFCF. There are a lot of homeless encampments that police themselves, they don't have a lot of crime because people are watching out for each other. They're
well,
not allowed, you know, they police themselves.
One of the things that we had told the power structure, can you hear me real good?
Yeah.
One of the things we had told the power structure was that we wanted legalized encampments. And what that meant was that we wanted those not to be walking around like zombies in the city. Because what happens is, if you tear down an encampment, where are they going to go?
Where are they going
to
go?
I mean, that was the most dumbest thing for the city to do in the first place. So you're better off having everyone centrally located where you can make sure that the women are safe, the children are safe, that the women are not getting raped, okay? They can't defend themselves from predators and men or whoever. Then you make sure that the drug dealers are not coming in selling dope. And then
That's
you get Fresno County supervisors to come in with the mental health people to come in and assess and work together. That's the problem in Fresno.
I'm just
telling you like it is. That's the problem in Fresno. Is that you got all these politicians downtown making $100,000 a year. None of them has ever been homeless. So how in the hell are you going to vote on something and talk about something that you never experienced?
Exactly.
So
they don't
want to
listen to the people.
So it's better off just to turn around and let people walk around like zombies in a city big as Fresno is and dangerous Fresno is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're out there because they want to be out there. Now listen to this brother here talk.
They have a shelter out on Quentin and 99 somewhere out there that they opened up. Probably just trying to get out there. I'm trying somebody to leave this way and better make sure it'll be there when I come back to get it. So we just probably go out there and get in the shelter. This is too much. Every other week. So I've been here for 3 months. So.
Okay.
I thought I was okay.
No, I have told you where to stop
them. Oh, I thought you meant just back there.
I'm not fine. So it's 45 feet the whole time.
These are human beings.
You go on the other side of the fence because this whole area is a work zone.
Why don't they help it?
So, one of the things that, you know, we have to understand is that Fresno is ranked in the nation. Fresno is ranked in the nation to have the highest concentration of poverty.
That's right.
In the world.
That's
we
right.
went from number one to number two. So the question becomes, how did Fresno become a city of poverty that sits in the most richest ag industry in the world?
Mm-hmm.
See, nobody is asking that question. Why is it that Fresno sits right in the breadbasket of ag that makes over $50-60 billion a year, but Fresno has the highest concentration of poverty?
Well, we could talk about that, Rev, because you and I know for a fact that the farmers, the big farmers, those industrial complex kind of farmers, are able to make that kind of money. Why? Because they're hiring and paying low wage, you know, immigrants from Mexico, Central America, on and on. The same people that they're trying to deport now help to propel Fresno County into that money. And this is the schizophrenia of America, of California, of the United States. We want you to help us make money until we don't want you no more. And this is traditionally what they do. We can talk about 400 years of chattel slavery. This country was built on the backs of African Americans. And now we see it playing out again in the Central Valley. So you have great wealth on one hand, and you have great poverty on the other. And we ask, how does this happen? It happens because that's the way capitalism works in America. You cannot have rich people without having poor people. Can't have it. But the way that they're addressing this homelessness, Rev, and people say, oh, well, this is going on in every, you know, large city. We're talking about right here. We're talking about right here. And we're talking about a city that is full, rife with churches of all stripes. All stripes of churches, Christians. Why is it that homelessness has expanded, and why is it that so many people are dying on the street when we have all this? You know, I'm doing Rev now, everybody, you know, asking these questions because I don't understand, you know. I don't understand. So, Rev, where should we go from this? If we have people who are listening who are people of conscience, what do we do?
We have a caller just called in. Hopefully it's someone that's, anyway. Well, 4634, welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show.
4644. Where is Fresno? Is that San Francisco? I'm in the Midwest.
No, Fresno sits in between Los Angeles and Sacramento. It's 3 hours north, 3 hours south.
Oh, okay.
It's in the
well, I don't know much about it.
It's in the San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah, I don't ask the question, why do people continue to vote for the same politicians out there? I guess that would be Nancy Pelosi. Congresswoman, so I don't know if I think she's out of San Francisco. Then you got Maxine Waters.
That's so
much. Yeah, then like for instance in Baltimore, you got Elijah Cummings. Right now, him, Pelosi, and Omar, they over in Ghana partying. So why do people continue to vote for these folks?
Well, I can give it from my perspective as a young man. I'm only 49, but I think that it's a lack of education. I think one. I think two. We have people who use unions to lobby. I think politics is a money game now. It's who can raise the most money. Really not about the substance of what they're talking about. You know, for instance, here in Fresno, we have our chief of police now who wants to run for mayor. And his track record is so crappy that
corrupt,
you know, with the corruption within the department, you know. But
how about Kamala Harris?
Can I just interject for a minute, Rev?
Yeah.
Sure. To give part of the answer, and everything you said is true. Another big part of it for the San Joaquin Central Valley is that we sit in a very conservative red section of California. Now, I think that the tide is going to turn. I mean, Orange County, which was totally red and Republican, flipped and is now blue. So if they can do it in Orange County, I'm hoping that we can do it in the Central Valley. But conservative politicians have had a chokehold on this valley for a long time, and the rich have continued to get richer, the poor have continued to get poorer, and now they're trying to deport all the people that they had working in the agricultural fields in the San Joaquin Valley. So Reverend Harris is right about it being a money game. He's
These cities that I'm talking about, those cities been Democratic. I vote conservatives also. Well, actually, I'm an issue credit. I vote issues, but I have voted for conservatives, and I voted for Democrats on issues. But these big cities, especially out north, have been Democratic strongholds for a long time. St. Louis is 1949.
But that's not Fresno. Fresno only has 500,000 people in it. We only have 500,000.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to figure out what you're saying, because we're talking about homelessness right now in the city of Fresno.
Homelessness in these other cities too now.
I understand that. But this is a particular kind of thing that we're talking about here. But, no, I understand what you're saying, and I understand that you're conservative. But the thing is that when it comes to poverty, if you don't have any money, then you don't have any voice. And I think what Reverend Harris said was right on time about that.
Well, you know, there's some things.
With you, Reverend.
There's things that contribute what's called the cause and effect. When you look at education, and you look at if you're not able to be in a commanding position, then you're going to be relegated to those occupations, professions. That's not going to pay very much. You're lacking discretionary funds in order to do things as far as helping your children to be elevated above you. It's not just no one thing that you can put your finger on. It's a very complicated matter. Now, do the churches, what are they doing in order to help alleviate the homelessness problem?
Well, Reverend was, could you take that?
Well, the churches are very conservative too. They are very, embedded with the power structure that controls. Fresno is like, if you was to draw a circle, right, and draw an imaginary line down the middle, half of that circle we call North Fresno, which has all of the, say, rich people, lack of better words. Hierarchy, judges, attorneys, whatever. The other half of that circle is the circle of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the circle that we call North Fresno runs the entire city because they have the big mega white churches and this, this, and that. So when it comes time to vote, they outvote the entire city, because the south of the city is in this poverty piece, right, that they're just more concerned about trying to survive from day to day and pay to keep their light bill on and what have you. North Fresno are the people who makes the decisions. And so it comes a point in time where it's like, well maybe if we go up and talk to them, decision makers, and let them know that we're living in a community that cooks dead animals every day. And you would think that they would care. You would think
you're
that
talking like cows, chickens, and hogs, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Rendering plant.
And so,
all right.
Then when you start looking at statistics about air and water, then the statistics starts breaking down, saying, well, okay, well, because this part of the city, which is the poverty city, not that, you know, I want to live in poverty. It's just I like living in my neighborhood. But living in my neighborhood, I have to deal with the stench or the smell of these dead animals, because the statistic says that the lifespan is 20 years less, Harris, living where
That's
you
right.
are than living up here with us rich folks. Now, do you want to live there or do you want to live up here with us? Well, I'm not one to abandon my people and my community. So I stay and I fight. Okay? I stay and I
mm-hmm.
educate. But I would but see, sir, the problem that I'm having with people today, it's either right or it's wrong. Now, maybe I'm right or wrong for thinking like that. But is it right to have a rendering plant in a community that has asthma, that has health problems? Is it right?
How long has the plant been there, sir?
So the plant, so this is how, you know, back in the day, things were grandfathered in, right? So during that time of the 50s, it was created, or the late 40s, then it went to another company, then the name changed, it went to another company. But what happened was that the city grew, the city didn't make policy for the rendering plant. So the rendering plant has been operating since 1950. Here we are in 2019.
Yep.
And the community has done an outcry. The community, we have band together and tried to get attorneys and this and that. And but the issue is that the city attorney that used to be the city attorney is the rendering plant attorney now. So he knows all the holes and this and that. And so then right across the street from the rendering plant is a park. Big park.
Come on.
With trees and everything, but the grass is always dead. Dean said, well, why is the grass always dead? Well, behind the park, back in the day, in the late 70s, it was a wrecking yard. Somebody buried over 1,000 or, I don't know, 5,000 batteries in the ground.
Landfill.
So now we're dealing with a hazard situation. Well, the city just comes in and they just fence it off. You know, don't enter. Toxic land. Okay, but the park, which is this big old mound, used to be a dump.
Yeah.
So now the park,
sure
the city said, well, since all the white folks and the Jews and Armenians leaving this area, we're going to move up north, build that area, leave this area for them, and we're just going to put dirt on top of it. And put some trees.
Yep.
So we're the
Our
only community.
Let us go there.
We're the only community here in this area, sir, that has a park on top of a dump.
Well, what about your state EPA? And then the next step, I guess, is federal. Well, you have any responses out of there?
Let me just say this: we have one big rendering plant left because this was before. Reverend Harris was born, but there used to be more than just the one that's there. There used to be several rendering plants that were there. And because the hue and cry of the community was so loud, they had to close up. But this one, this stubborn one, is still there. So the community did do its work. They did their due diligence and everything and got some of those plants closed down. But this one...
Mm-hmm.
This one is very stubborn, and so now the plan is, Reverend, help me out with this, that they're going to close it and move it, but they're moving it where there's still residential homes. Am I right on that one?
Right, more farmland.
Oh,
and
right.
The deal was that they want taxpayers, us, to pay for their move. So it's really a mess, you know, and it's like, but again, you're dealing with a community that don't have money to buy attorneys, to hire attorneys. You're dealing with a community that's just trying to survive from day to day. You're dealing with a community saying, well, you know, hey, I can't afford to move up north, so I guess I have to stay here and breathe in all this toxic air.
It's true. My parents got redlined in the Southwest Fresno in 1948, right after my dad got out of discharge from the U.S. Navy. They came here to buy land. And my mom, who just turned 100 last year, she beat the odds. But she wasn't born in Fresno, of course. She beat the odds, and she still lives in Southwest Fresno. Still lives there.
Well, it's a heck of a story you're selling it. Telling.
I wish it were a story that we could write another ending to, but we're working on that ending. Reverend Harris and myself and some other progressive black folks are working on the ending.
Well,
and it's
keep
all
fighting.
True.
I think the bigger conversation is that we have to educate those who are coming after us. Because one day, like it or not, we're going to die, okay? And it's important that we educate those that's younger than us, right?
That's right.
That you have to keep fighting a good fight. You do not have to be. You do not have to settle for less. You do not have to play on a part that's a dump. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You deserve better than that. You deserve equality. You deserve what's best. Okay, and I think that's the message that we try to send to people is that hey, bad things happen to good people every day, but the question
has anybody done any studies to see what's leaching out of the ground where this park is? Universities could come in and do that for, you know, they wouldn't charge anything for it.
About 20 years ago, I was working with the county of Fresno, and they said that they went out and did their inspections and whatever, and that there's no leaks of any kind. And I said, well, if that's the case, why the grass won't grow?
Yeah, that's a good question.
you
can't go by what they tell you. You have to get someone independent.
Exactly. So, you're right, sir. It's still because I feel that this park or dump, what you want to call it, for lack of better words, is going to blow up one day. Because if you look at the technology of landfills today, they have pipes that goes down into the dirt. To release the gases.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
There's no release of gases from this park because it was just covered up with dirt. Now, we don't even know, right, unless we go and look at records, because, you know, what was dumped there. I mean, we don't even know if our children are getting cancer, okay, from playing on
this. Have you got a naval base close by?
We have Lemoore Air Force.
That's in Lemoore. Yeah.
Well,
Lemoore Naval Air Station.
I bet you a dime to a donut. Some of their stuff is probably dumped there.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that. And the thing is that, Rev, do you remember when they wanted to expand the dump and make it, I think it was going to be close to Chandler Field. Do you remember that? And people like Bob Mitchell. Yeah. Man, they wanted to put a bigger dump in Southwest Fresno. They wanted to expand and just have all the city's refuge come, you know, to our area. So the original dump wasn't good enough, right? This was going to be the Fresno dump part two. But but people, you know, organized and mobilized, and they could not do it. They could not do it.
But I'm going to say,
well, you know, if you can prove that – that military facility dumped something there, and we could just about bet that it's something that's toxic. Then that'd be better than trying to prove something on some private company. You might be able to get it cleaned up then.
Right, right. But you're right. I'm going to look back into that because I just feel this piece of property is going to blow up one day. We don't know what's buried under it, and then behind it, you got all these batteries that, you know, that could be leaking into the
and
water.
That,
too,
yeah,
you know?
If it's batteries, then we're talking about lead.
Yeah.
Well, this area of California is known for, because remember, we've got ag waste and everything else going on here. We've got open fields that are being sprayed with toxic chemicals that are blowing all over the place. The air quality in the Central Valley is bad because basically what you have is a big soup bowl, and Fresno sits in the bottom of it. And so you have all this air blowing from everywhere, you know, and it's really bad. And see, right now, I guess we're averaging like 99 degrees, rev, 100 degrees. And so it's all getting cooked, and people are breathing that.
Well, you know, if you can find some Monsanto products that's being applied to those fields and ending up getting in the air, then that there is yet another case. But what universities are close to Fresno? Any popular universities? You know, a lot of the legwork in law that you would need to make a case, you could probably find it in the universities among some of those classes. I mean, I've seen that before.
They've been doing that. Yes, they've been doing that for a while. And Reverend Harris, you helped me out on this. I know that in cities like Delano, where they had the cancer clusters, you know, there's been a lot of cases about that type of thing in the Central Valley. But, you know, the money usually, a lot of times we don't hear about it, sir, because, you know, when you do an out-of-court settlement, you usually have a gag order attached to that, and it's not talked about. But we have one of our major universities is right here in the city. It's California State University, Fresno. And then you've got Pacific University, and you've got UC Merced, which is one of the newer UC schools, and you've got UC Davis, which specializes in ag-related everything. I mean, it's known for that. You have UC Davis. So it's we have the brain power. What we don't have here in Fresno is the politicians don't have the political will, and we have a population that is totally dominated by the power structure. You've got a lot of black and brown people, and now Hmong people, thanks to the Vietnam War, who live in Fresno, but they don't have a lot of money. But the thing that they do have that Reverend Harris is really in the vanguard of is mobilizing these people to flex their political muscle. So we're building coalition, and we're gonna make things better. It hasn't always been.
Build them coalitions and get the evidence, evidence as is reported from different sources, and you taking that evidence and putting it in presentation form. And going around doing these presentations, you know, even in front of a student body, and you don't know what will come out of those bodies of people that you're sharing this information of what's going on.
Absolutely. Reverend Harris is very good at that. This is somebody I've known for a long time, and when he was younger, you could just see it on him. He's like God's warrior. He is a perfect example of a servant leader. He doesn't mind his hands dirty, but by the same token, he's able to build coalitions and energize people, and that's what we need. And that's one of the reasons why we're holding this Progressive Black Summit in October and inviting all of the black elected officials from Stockton, which is in the north end of our valley, to Bakersfield, which is on the south end, and, you know, all the activists in between to come and bring their ideas, because we are under siege here. This is the tipping point.
And, you know, another thing, too, that he said, you have to get your young people involved, because I've seen many cases. You know, there's a town in Georgia called Harris Neck. And at the end of World War II, this is a pristine area. They let the U.S. Air Force use part of it for airstrip. And they never gave it back. And it's the black community. And people are dying off. that knows the story, but young people won't take it up. We see that in a lot of places. Another place down there in South Carolina, the Gullah people, they're having the same problem too. The people dying off, kids not taking it up. So you got to get your children, young people involved in these things.
Absolutely. We have a rich history and we have a rich culture, and there's no reason for us to be ashamed of it. I mean, if black people weren't strong and resilient, we'd all be dead by now. Wouldn't be none of us left. Wouldn't be now one of us left.
Yeah. So anyway, when I talk to people, I share the story, and maybe some other people take an interest in it, but you got to keep fighting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. All right, I'm going to get off from here. I really appreciate the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you for calling in. We're at our hour slot, and we're going to go ahead and sign off. We just want to, again, thank everyone for calling in, and also our last caller. He called in the other night. Real good conversation, real good debate. And that's what we need to do. We need to have a conversation, have a debate, to learn how to agree to disagree without getting mad and upset. And you don't want to hit somebody over the head with a baseball bat. And so that's not what Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show is about. It's not what the Western Democratic Club is about. We believe in what we believe in. We speak truth to power. We're non-apologetic about it. We have a crisis here in Fresno within our black community. We have recognized that. We have our men who are black men who are disengaged from the progressive level. They are engaged with the political level, political piece with those downtown, but we're trying to find out how can we get our black men more engaged in the political process of the people, not politicians, the people. The people united will never be divided. And that's a chant that I always say when I go out and I march in the streets. We're also dealing with the Bullard situation with the white sister student painting her face black, using the word nigger to that context. We're also dealing with that, as well as the school board trustee, Mr. Terry. I can never think of his last name.
Terry Slattick.
Slattick went out to Bullard High School and interrogated and intimidated and made our children cry. Threatening them that he would, that they would not be able to cheerlead if they don't stop talking about this black face conversation.
That's right.
And so there's just a lot going on here in Fresno. Mississippi Fresno. And so, but we need, you know, we need people, we need bodies, we need people to be consistent, transparent. You know, we all not going to agree on everything, and we shouldn't agree on everything, because if we agreed on everything, how do we learn anything? And so, you know, I'm just calling it out what it is. I'm not mad at nobody. I don't hate nobody. Even though I know people mad at me and hate me, but that's okay. At least I know that I'm on your mind, and I appreciate that. So, you know, we're going to, you know, reach one, teach one. We're going to take the village that black folks, our ancestors, built, that's been destroyed, that's been dismantled by the white power structure, white supremacy, white racism. And unfortunately, they have persuaded some of black folks to think that way. And so we call them house Negroes.
Once
we identify those house Negroes, then we deal with them house Negroes and let them know. We'll spank them on their little behinds and get yourself back together and for your people and stand for your people. And so, again, we just want to thank everyone again. Someone has wrote something here on my Facebook here.
I asked a question earlier in the show just to put it out there to the audience. I wanted to find out if, you know, we had anybody who had actually contributed to homeless people, whether it be goods or food or money. And I already know you have, Reverend Harris. I know I know you have. I know that I have not so much money, but I have given food. I have given water. I was very good about that when we had people who were doing the Occupy in the courthouse. You remember that. I took food down there to them. So we can do better. We can do better.
Yeah, we can do better, and we're going to do better. And like I said, and this is where it starts with a dialogue. So Sharon from Hanford wrote something. I can hardly read it because it's dark in my studio here. But she said black people have been broken under, what is that? Understandable. Our foundation, core family structure is unsuitable. Our focus has been forced. Okay, all right. Love to get Sharon back on the radio. I mean, that sister has much energy, so much knowledge.
Powerful sister. Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I got to go down to Hanford and cook her a breakfast or make her a smoothie or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll take her
you
a box.
Okay. I was going to say something, but let me hush because you didn't cook breakfast for all of us in Fresno. So let me shut hush.
Maybe I'll take her a watermelon or something. I don't know. But I got to get my sister back on the show. She is deep.
Yes.
I love her conversation, her energy. She's just knowledgeable. She's conscious. She loves her people.
Yes, she is.
And, you
know,
she's been down here to the Freedom School, you know,
yes,
helping down here with the babies.
And not just once, several times.
Yeah, I mean, she drove down here on her dime, on her gas, you know. I mean, I was down here. She said, hey, what are you doing? Somebody trying to chop these weeds. She said, okay, I'm on my way. You know, I mean, that's a sister that really shows love. You know what I'm saying?
That's nation building
there. I just wish we had more people, but more sisters and brothers that had that spirit that she has, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I just love her. She's just a sister. I mean,
we get in there.
I think she has three daughters. She done put them all through college as a single mother, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, we just want her to know that we appreciate her, you know. I mean,
yes, we do, sister.
We just want her to know that right now. Hopefully she's listening to the show. And, you know, just keep your head up, sister. You know, you're revolutionary down in the Hanford area. You know, if anybody put a paw on you, you know, we coming down there 10 deep in cars, okay? We rolling like the Black Panthers did back in the 60s, all right? So I don't think Hanford want to mess with you, my sister. But any rate, we're going to go ahead and sign off. It's been a long day for me, and I'm going to go ahead and get some rest. And
all right,
see
now.
I have a speech prepared. Oh, she got a speech prepared. Okay, all right. We'll get you next week, my sister. And we're going to go
Absolutely.
Ahead and sign on, Sister Eileen. Thank you for tuning in tonight. And
all right,
hey,
everybody.
We're going to make this happen. It's Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. And I'm out.